96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The Belew Senior High grade-fixing scandal is a big deal for the district, but it's also something we've seen before. Last month, an independent audit in the Prince George's County school system found grades were changed for students even after the quarter ended, and some students did not earn the diplomas they were awarded. And, of course, don't forget the 11 Atlanta teachers and school administrators convicted in 2015 for a huge cheating conspiracy on standardized tests. Well, tonight, we take a look at the Belew issue and the wider implications. My guests are Ward 8 D.C. State Board of Education member Marcus Batchelor, Raymond Bell, founder and president of the Hope Project and a Belew graduate, and Dr. Gregory Carr, chair of Afro-American Studies here at Howard University. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you all for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you for having us.
Mr. Batchelor, let me ask you first, what do you think is happening at Belew?
Yeah, well, I think in terms of the allegations that have been made, you know, on their face, I think the allegations are really disturbing. And I think, you know, that's why my immediate concern has been to get to the bottom of the situation. What's actually happening at Belew? I think we need to validate some of these allegations, validate the data, and look at them in a more in a broader context. But I believe that, you know, if any portion of these allegations are true, I think it's a sign that we have a larger problem system wide that we really need to take a serious look at.
Do you think that they are true?
I'm hesitant to rush to judgment. You know, I think, you know, there's so many factors to a lot of these allegations. I'm really concerned in making sure that the two internal probes that are happening are done with fidelity and that we get to the bottom of the situation quickly. But I've also called for an independent investigation to make sure that we have a non-biased voice really taking a hard look. And if we find that these allegations are true, then we need to hold the folks responsible accountable.
Have you spoken to teachers since this information has come out?
I've heard from some teachers, not just at Belew, but citywide, you know, who are saying that, you know, more broad based that they feel like, you know, that they've experienced some of these things in their schools, in their school communities around the city. And so, you know, I believe that, you know, we need to take a hard look. And I think, you know, these allegations, you know, on their face are emblematic of a larger problem. And I think teachers are at a point in our city, some teachers are at a point in our city where they feel unsupported or they feel like they could be supported a lot better. And that trickles down to students, right? And I think we need to keep students at the center of this issue. We need to make sure that they're being served in the best way and that our system isn't failing them.
Dr. Carr, I just ran down three examples. Obviously, these are allegations at Belew, the independent study in Prince George's, the scandal in Atlanta. There are other examples. From your perspective, what's happening here with urban school districts and these similar kinds of situations?
Well, brother, you know, as someone who has been teaching for almost 30 years, K-12 and university, I would say that the system is doing exactly what it was designed to do.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, whether it be Atlanta, Memphis, Baltimore, Prince George County, Englewood, New Jersey, all that in the last several years, you know, teachers are under an incredible amount of pressure to convert the teaching and learning process into some kind of quantitative spreadsheet that is then assessed by people who have never been in a classroom. People think teaching is easy because everybody had a teacher. And quite frankly, teaching is the highest craft in any society. The United States of America has never been committed to teaching. Public education, particularly in the South, is something that only came into existence after the Civil War, and that was because black legislators demanded it and for everybody. And since then, there's been a long, slow decline from commitment to teaching. And this is what we see at Belew. I've heard wonderful things about Yetunde Reeves, the principal, before she came here, an African-centered educator. I know what it means to have that type of person committed. But once you start empowering parents, once you start getting young people interested in their learning, they're going to turn around and expect to get certain type of teaching. And if you don't have teachers who are supported, first of all, teachers, meaning not people with teaching degrees, but people with content mastery in their subject areas, then you're going to be faced with teachers who are in an impossible situation. And from the top down, you've got legislators who are pretty much human jokes. And I'm talking about mayors. I'm talking about governors. I'm talking about people who don't know anything about teaching. And then I'm so glad to hear you say that, Brother Batchelor, because then you got young people like you who are involved in the process who know what needs to be done, but you've got to fight people on both sides. Mm-hmm. And then you have unhelpful folks like from the Washington Post or NPR, these do-gooders who seem to think they know what needs to be done, who wouldn't be caught dead with our children if the lights went out on a street corner in Southeast, who somehow now are so committed and concerned about these young people.
But
and
let me, but let, but
it's a book that is destined to fail.
But in defense of that, what those news organizations have brought to the fore are the same things that school board members brought to the fore in Prince George's. And one could argue that the Atlanta Journal-Constitution brought out in Memphis. So whether you debate about how it comes out, I think it's important that we do know this so correctional action can be taken.
No, I would agree, but I would say that how it comes out has a lot to do with what people pose as solutions. Mm-hmm. So when you read the Washington Post narrative, it's that same typical narrative. These ignorant students are in there and there's chaos. And we talked to three teachers who left because they wanted high standards. And then we talked to an expert at the University of Pennsylvania who's never been in a classroom who says that this is the when you frame the narrative in terms of this deficit, the first word that should be abolished from any of this conversation is an achievement gap. There's only one gap. Any teacher will tell you this, and that's between what a student knows how to do at that moment and what they can know how to do. The teacher's job is to help them close that gap. Anytime you start framing these things in terms of performance between white and black students, you make the illusion that white students are somehow superior in this country.
Interesting point.
And that's simply not true. American education as general is failing.
Ray Bell, with the Hope Project, you have, over the years, had students in Ward 8 mm-hmm. and from Ballou
yes.
come to you. And what you are trying to do is to kind of stem the tide of a situation just like this. Talk to me about what you're seeing when you have these graduates come to you, whether they graduated last year or 5 years ago.
So thank you for having me, Harold. Sure. I've been frustrated about this long before the current situation, the story broke. I mean, we have kids that will come to us in September, high school diploma in hand, Harold. And we showcase what we plan to offer, this fancy job in IT. It's only going to take 6 months or less, great internship, and all these leads from all these recruiters that want to hire them after you get these credentials. These kids are unable to even enroll in the program because they do fifth and sixth grade reading and math. It's criminal. It almost brings tears to your eyes. They're so enthusiastic. They want to do everything right, but the system has failed them miserably, and it hurts. And then we as adults, the society, will see that kid on the corner and don't understand why they're not, quote unquote, working or doing well. If every single kid that was in Ballou that graduated in 2017, if they were on the corner doing absolutely nothing, it's not their fault. Mm. Somebody else put them in that position to not be able to compete in this highly skilled and educated workforce here in Washington, D.C.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about allegations of grade fixing and high absenteeism at Ballou High School. My guests are Ward 8 D.C. State Board Member of Education Marcus Batchelor, Ray Bell, founder and president of the Hope Project and a Ballou graduate, and Dr. Gregory Carr, chair of Afro-American Studies at Howard University. If you have a question, if you have a comment about this issue, give us a call. Lines are open again at 202-319-7810. Mr. Batchelor, I'm pursuant to what Ray just said. This didn't just happen when these young people got to high school. Is this an issue that is broader and deeper as it relates to educating children in underserved communities?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we really have to do a much better job at making sure we're serving our students from birth. And I think that's even more important in communities like ours. We have to do so much work to empower families, to build up parents, and then to make their children good students. And we need to have better coordination both in government and in the community to make sure that that's happening. And unfortunately, I think, you know, as Mr. Bell alluded to, in so many cases, that's not happening for our students. And we have to make sure that we have the type of oversight and the type of involvement from the public that's going to ensure that our public education system does that and achieves that for every student that walks through our door. And we know that some students, you know, have more challenges than others, but we're a prosperous enough city to be able to find the resources and find the human capital to get things done for our students. That's not the case in other parts of our country, but in Washington, D.C., in a city as prosperous as ours, in the nation's capital, every student should have a chance to be successful, and every student should get what they need, both inside and outside the classroom.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Israel, calling from D.C., what's on your mind real quick? Are you there?
How you doing this evening, sir?
Just fine. Go right ahead. You got a minute.
Yeah. Okay, cool. At the end of the day, I mean, I think the kids need to be held accountable as well. Like, they knew they was missing these type of days and they wasn't learning. At the end of the day, they're the ones who need that education. They're the ones who are going out to the workforce. When I was in the fifth grade, my teacher told me, and it hurts to this day, I got mine, you got yours to get. So at the end of the day, they need to be held accountable as well.
Interesting. Ray, you don't agree with that?
Not at all, and I have proof of that, because when our students come to us, we understand they're going to come with some challenges. As an instructor, as a project manager, as a program manager, our job is to convince them that there's a better way. I have had kids come to me and say, Mr. Bell, I've never worked hard in school, but when I showed up in Hope Project, I put in 115% because we showed the outcome. So many kids are going to school because they assume that's what they're supposed to do versus putting them in a position to see the outcome at the end. High school is the beginning of something greater. And I don't know if that I don't think that's happening enough in the schools to make kids be inspired and want to do right.
Interesting point. I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. We're talking about Ballou High School and the broader implications for urban school districts, not just D.C., but all over the nation. We're going to talk to Mike. We're going to talk to Tony, Clifton, Jennifer. Stay on the line. Do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. And we're continuing to take your phone calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about allegations of grade fixing at Ballou High School. My guests are Ward 8 D.C. State Board of Education member Marcus Batchelor, Raymond Bell, founder and president of the Hope Project, and he's a Ballou graduate as well, and Dr. Greg Carr, chair of Afro-American Studies at Howard University. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise I will take your phone calls. Jennifer, calling from D.C., what's on your mind?
Good afternoon, everybody.
Hi.
I am a Ballou Knight myself, class of 86, and I'm an attorney now. And I'm a native D.C. Washingtonian and born and reared in Southeast in Ward 8. Went to Janney Elementary, went to Alice Deal, and graduated from Ballou. The issue is, and you spoke to it, host, this nationwide problem. The Education Act of 1964 has a title in it, Title I. Ballou and a lot of schools in across the country in economically disadvantaged areas are what they call Title I schools. You can go on the D.C. Public School website and find Title I schools in the district. I used to be in a Title I school, Janney Elementary. I mean, I'm not Janney, Green Elementary at Mississippi Avenue. They've changed the name now. But what happened at that school was we were being given books below our reading grade level. My brother came home and threw a third grade book across the floor, and he was in the fifth grade. And my mother said, why did you do that? And he said, I had that book. My mother got special permission for us to leave from Green and go to Janney Elementary at Tenleytown because those schools were not Title I, and they did not give kids books below their reading grade level. And then we went to Deal, and then my brother went to Wilson. I came back to Ballou. I have another sister who graduated from Wilson. The difference is by the time those kids graduate from Title I schools that are Johnson and the other elementary schools in these economically disadvantaged areas, mm-hmm. by the time that kid gets to Ballou, they're far below their reading grade level.
Well, let me ask you this, okay? And I salute you for your achievement, no matter where you were. So what happened? Why, you know, what?
Listen, I'm going to tell you. I'm trying to tell you, and I know, you know, there's a limited amount of time on the show.
Very, very. So please.
It is, but it's important to get this said.
Go ahead.
It's important that you cannot pass kids in order to meet statistics. So that the numbers look good, but the kid missed 3 months of school.
Mm-hmm.
That's absurd. Those kids, if a kid missed 3 months of school at Wilson, they would be flunked.
Hmm.
They would not be given a graduation cap.
Okay.
Now, I understand that the kid arrived at the school wrong, disadvantaged.
Mm-hmm.
A ninth grade student or 10th grade student is on a seventh, fifth, sixth grade reading level. They've already been hurt because they are coming up in Title I schools.
Well, let me stop you. Jennifer, I've got to stop you there. Dr. Carr, go ahead. You have something to say.
Thank you. And you're a lawyer, so you understand that. In the same period, you had the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, in particular Title VI as it related to higher education. But the whole notion that a Title I school is somehow disadvantaged because of poverty, that is certainly the social effect. But the purpose of the law was to make sure that those who were disadvantaged, in fact, received what they needed to be advanced. I don't blame your family for removing you all from the school. In fact, that was the thing that you had to do. I worked for the School District of Philadelphia for a number of years as an administrator, and I was sitting in meetings where people were making decisions about these young people. Title I schools mostly. In fact, Philadelphia was a Title I district, and I'm sure you know what that means. And they who had school-aged children would not send their children to the schools that they were claiming to want to help. At one point in a meeting, I shut the meeting down with the superintendent of schools. I said, let me tell you something. You all people, you have children who would be in these schools, but you won't send them to the schools you claiming to help. And one of these associate superintendents said to me, you don't sacrifice your own. Here's the problem. The problem is that we don't have the courage to stay in those schools and force the government to make sure that your brother wouldn't have to fling a third grade textbook across the floor. But I understand that there's a sacrifice involved. Until we're willing to make that sacrifice and make the law stand for everyone, until we stop taking our children out and sending them to the island schools in DCPS like a Deal, like a Wilson, then in fact we are simply asking for our people to be sacrificed on this wheel.
Jennifer, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. Mr. Batchelor, you wanted to make a brief comment also.
Yeah, you know, I'll just say I think when we look at, you know, schools in communities like ours, we do have to think about, you know, how we support, how parents in the communities support our local schools, right? Our schools have to belong to our communities. And I think there's a lot of factors that have prevented that. You know, I think our very anemic level of public oversight of our public education system is one thing, right? You know, even, you know, folks elected representatives on the board don't have access to data, don't have authority to make certain decisions, right? And the education system reports to one person, the entire bureaucracy, right? And so how do you have community investment in our local schools if you don't have community oversight of our local schools? And I think, you know, we've been in 10 years of mayoral control at this point, and I think it's about time. And you know, there's a discussion that's happening now in Philadelphia. I think they just restored local control of the school system, right? So I think it's about time to figure out how we put the public back in public education so that our communities can take our schools back.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Clifton calling from Oxon Hill. Clifton, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just wanted to comment because I'm not too old. Like, high school for me was just around the corner, and I just feel like that it's really the teachers. Like, when I was in school, I wasn't enthused. I wasn't really getting taught. And even, like, my younger cousins, and they're in high school, and they getting handed out worksheets. I feel like it's the system and the teachers that not really getting students excited about learning. And the teachers are lazy, and that's why the grades are being changed, because they're not really putting in the effort to educate the students that go to the school.
I thank you so much for your comment. I would venture to say that there are a lot of teachers that would take issue with that issue.
I'm one of them, brother.
Yeah, with that said, and I think one of the constants in almost every example that I mentioned, the three examples that I mentioned today, Atlanta, Prince George's, and even the allegations about Ballou, is that there were incentives, whether they were positive reinforcements such as bonuses, or there were incentives such as if you don't improve, you lose your job. If you don't improve, then the county cannot be a beacon for economic development, because that's what people look at when they move to areas. They what are the schools like? And if the schools aren't doing well, and if those grade scores aren't up, and if the graduation rates are not doing well, then there is a problem. And so are those incentives part of it?
No, I mean, look, teaching is not valued in this country. If there was, teachers would be among some of the highest paid professionals in this country. I love what Brother Batchelor said. You're right, brother. Community investment is the trade-off. But see, most cities in this country don't value the citizens in the country who are at the lower end of the economic. So you don't want these people just wandering around schools, having meetings, having say and conversation, even though you've got their children in the building. So when you look at a Ballou, when you've got a staff that's starting to say things like, you know what, I want your mom and them to come up here, or your cousin, or who you staying with, come on up in the building. Mm-hmm. They say, like, Brother Bell, come in here. That's going to create chaos. Why? The structure isn't set up to have those unwashed people in here. We know what to do with your kids. And so then what ends up happening is you've got a system that wants to call itself educating folks, and how do you know you're educating them? By the product. You've got to see them employable. So then you start saying things to kids like, well, maybe you're not made for college, or maybe you're not, you know what, let's get you in this trade kind of thing. But you haven't put the apparatus together for them to get the skills. Mm-hmm. So now then you end up with this crisis. The teaching and performance is tied to getting these students ready. So then you say, well, we'll fix it. We'll give you a little bonus here. We'll give you a little bonus here. Now the teachers have to retreat to the only thing they have to battle for them as a whole, which is the union. And we know the unions need to be reformed, not abolished, but reformed. And now you've just got an adversarial relationship. If the teachers, if this was Finland, where they get paid over $100,000 a year to teach, the problem wouldn't be the teachers' bonuses. Why? Because you've got people who are going to school saying, I got to be a teacher, man. This is the best. This country does not want to educate its citizens, and the poor are the evidence.
And speaking of education and being employable, so it falls to the Ray Bells of the world.
Yes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, when they come to you and they are not prepared, what do you do? I mean, you obviously don't kick them out.
Sure. So the preparation is more than just, you know, traditional academics. And I probably shouldn't even say this, we enrolled a young man that did reading and math on fifth and sixth grade level. Now, granted, he was 30. He had the second highest certification scores of anybody in the class. And we knew why. Because it was something he wanted, and he could see the end goal. Now, him taking his CASAS or TABE test, that was just him taking another test, because they said, we got to take tests. But when it came time for him to take those tests that led to his Homeland Security IT job he has now, homeboy aced it. My point to this is, we have to be more creative, and we have to paint the end game in mind for our kids at the 4th, 5th, 7th, 8th grade, especially 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. So when they show up for us, I know I can't re-educate them. I can't put them through 9th through 12th grade. But what I can do is focus on some skills that I know I can transfer. Communication skills, attention to detail, being a lot more disciplined, understanding importance of time management, and then the strategic skills around technology, giving them the certification, and then getting them to understand how the workforce works in terms of working with recruiters, staff, and agencies in these big government contracts. I take what I have, even if it's lemon, and we make lemonade out of it. People don't even realize this. We have built a whole new middle class in Washington, D.C. I got 600 graduates. They average $52,000 a year. Some of them got top secret clearances with polygraphs. There's an army of us that work over at the Department of Defense in the Pentagon. None of them have college degrees. They rolling. Just now when I left the school, one of my graduates was interviewing with News Channel 7 about what we want to do for the kids at Baloo. Dude is 23, make $100,000. He works at USDA. And his girlfriend makes 60. They're about to get married next year. So you're talking about a household income of $160,000 between a 22 and a 23-year-old non-degree. So it's possible. But people got to put forth the effort. And a young man who talked about the kids need to do their part.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the easiest thing in the world is to blame the kids. It's the easiest thing. When the students show in, I tell them, you don't have to take advantage of me. I'm giving it to you when you walk through the door.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Mike calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Man, first off, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Secondly, everything you guys have been saying tonight is spot on. It's spot on. And I know my time is short, but I've been like going back and forth with folks on Facebook
mm-hmm.
about this all week long. And what I want to say is they're talking about kids coming to school half the time and they should be failed. Well, you fail them if they aren't passing the test. But if you got a kid that comes to class and does not get the material, then, you know, you have to blame the instructor. But if you have a kid that does not come to class and he is given a test at test time by the instructor and the test is being put together by the educational system and he aces it, you can't fail that kid.
Mike, let me say this, and I've got to go to a break, and thank you for your phone call. The most troubling allegation is that out of 181 school days, you have students that are missing as many as 90 of them, and according to the reports, that they still graduated. This isn't about lazy teachers. This isn't about getting the, you know, this is about time and attendance. And I think that, you know, that's where we get into the grade fixing allegation. It's a very complex and very complicated problem. And arguably there is no one solution. But certainly, Mike, thank you so much for your phone call. We're going to talk to Tony and George on the other side. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Jay Schutte, an American.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue the discussion about allegations of grade fixing at Baloo High School. One of the things that has been discussed of late is that 2 years ago, the graduation rate at Baloo was 57%, and then there was this groundswell, this 100% our graduation, the students who graduated all were accepted to UDC, which on the surface of it was something to be cheered. But in the wake of these allegations, and I would say if you've gone from 57 to 100% being accepted to college of any sort, Mr. Bachelor, wouldn't you give that the side eye? Wouldn't you think that was suspicious?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, young people having an option walking out of the building, I think that's a great thing, right? I think, you know, the fact that all of the students who walked in June, and many of them, you know, like you said, were enrolled in local community college or you know, local options. But the fact that everybody who walked out had an option for a post-secondary degree, I think it is a good thing.
But wasn't that as a result of a relationship? University of the District of Columbia, you had a D.C. school, so there was a relationship. This was expected. This wasn't, you know, no matter whether you got all A's or D's and C's, that you were immediately accepted.
Right. But that hadn't for some reason happened at Ballou in years previous, right? The fact that, you know, we're saying that any graduate who walks out, the fact that some of our graduates walked out with no option for a post-secondary degree, right, I think is more disturbing to me to say, you know, that, you know, even the students who, you know, are going to have to do some extra work walked out with an option. I mean, I think that that's a positive thing. Now, making sure that they're prepared for that option, I think, is a separate issue. Right. And so I think, you know, while I think that every student should have the option, and I'm not going to discount every student walking out of the school having that option
wherever it comes
last
from.
Year. Yeah. Exactly. But now we need to get to the bottom of whether those students were being served in the best way and whether all of those students were prepared. And I think these allegations put all of that into question, not only at Ballou, but system wide. But we still got a lot more information to find.
And Ray Bell brought this up during the break. So what happens even as we move through this investigation if the allegations that some of the diplomas that were awarded were not earned, what do you do for those students who just have their paper? How do you address that, Ray?
I want them. Mm-hmm. Every last one of them. And I would want them, and I want to prove a point. I'm willing to bet the attendance for those kids, if they enrolled in Hope Project, will be well over 90%. We're planning to do a campaign to recruit 25 to 50 of them to enroll in our program, put them through our tech training, our presentation skills, our professional development. Yes, we might spend some additional time on the business writing and some math and some of that kind of stuff. But I'm willing to bet the attendance is going to be sky high, and they're going to do exactly what every other student that has enrolled in our program have done.
But you can't do it all, right?
Well, the goal is to show the blueprint and get the city and outside organizations to help us. We've been doing a great job of developing people. The problem is we're not getting enough support to develop enough people to come out of poverty. And the saddest part about this, Earl, we got proof that this works, because that has always been the issue. There was a time when you couldn't get funding for an IT training. It was always hospitality, building, maintenance, and construction. It took me to yell and scream for 4 years before they invested any money in IT training. We're doing it now, but we need to be doing it on a much larger scale.
Well, Dr. Carr, does that mean that to be for high schools, the Ballous of the world and every place else, they have to dangle that money carrot in front of them in order to get them to come to school to do it? There's got to be more than that.
Money's an issue, of course, but really, you know, comprehension starts with what you already know. The thing that breaks my heart is that we see the human potential of our people. And let's just be candid. I'm talking about black people. I know there are other people involved.
Because not everybody's going to be an IT person.
Yes.
So not everybody gets the opportunity to imagine what they want to be when they're a child. So, I mean, this gets turned into a conversation about workforce development instead of human development. And I understand that what we're trying to do is fix a car that's on the road instead of putting the car over and getting all new parts, which means, of course, it's impossible. You're going down the road 90 miles an hour trying to fix the car while you're driving it. That's just not the whole conversation is absurd. But, you know, when I hear Brother Bell, I have no doubt, brother, that everybody comes to your program going to get what they need, because you're going to meet them where they are and take them to where they need to go.
Yes.
And then they begin their lives. These young people, you're talking about just getting ready to get married, they may decide in 20 years after they've had a kid or two and going, you know what, I'm going to go back because I want to study African literature. But they're going to be in a position to do that. Mm-hmm. Their human development isn't defined by their job. However, we're in a position where our people are hurting and struggling. And so when people talk about education, what they really mean is, can you make them people who won't get in the way of the society and maybe won't cause a problem? But we're trying to address them like human beings. That clash is inevitable. Finally, what happened at Ballou? Yeah, man, you know what? I have no doubt those kids weren't coming to school. I have no doubt at all that many of them did not earn those diplomas. But what does it mean to earn a diploma when a person can't imagine what their life can be?
Which goes back to the thing about, you know, after you've, like, almost like professional athletes that leave college to go to the pros.
Right.
And then after their career, the human development that you discuss is then they decide to go back.
No question.
And get a degree in something that they are passionate about.
What do you want to do with your life? Brother, some of them boys, since they're 8 years old, they listen to their coach every word. Why? Because they see the payoff. The payoff is, I'm going to get my mama a house, and I'm going to have all the money in the world. LeBron James didn't go to college, not because he's not interested in learning, but because since he was 6 years old, hit a growth spurt, they like, yes. I'm about to put all my family on. And think about it. We are the only group in this society. Malcolm Gladwell writes about this. We are the only group in this society who went through the phase of entertainers and athletes and stayed. Every immigrant group in this country went through their phase. The Jews, the Italians, the Irish, boxing. And then they transitioned into the next. We're the only ones who've been stuck permanently and telling our kids. I mean, how a kid going to sit in school and you didn't tell them forever, you need to be a rapper, you need to be an athlete, and you can make some money. And then we're going to tell them to take algebra. Come on, man. I mean, this is...
Let me go back to the phone lines. Tony, thanks for holding on. Calling from Fairfax, Virginia. What's on your mind?
As a former special ed teacher, I'm concerned that we're not really addressing what the real problem is.
What do you think that is, Tony?
And I think that the concern for me is that we're talking about children at the 12th grade. If a child can't read in the third grade, it's that they're not going to be, which will already put them.
I'm sorry, Tony, you say that again. You said the issue is what? I'm sorry, you broke up.
That are not reading by the third grade are known to be, are going to be behind. Mm-hmm. We should be talking to these children in third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. Where are the parents in all of this? Because if my child's not reading in third grade, here in Fairfax County, if their children are not reading, believe me, they're sitting in IEPs talking to who's going to make this up for my child. They're working hard. The Baloo should not be in the talking about their reading on fifth and sixth grade level. Mm-hmm. That is a problem.
So are you suggesting that, let's take it out of the classroom and talk about something more foundational. Are you talking about that really basic thing when the child is young, parents need to read to them?
Basic fundamental things need to go on. And we have to start at the ground level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To read in 12th.
Well, Tony, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. Let me go to George. George calling from D.C. What's on your mind? George, are you there? Give me a call back if you can. No, go ahead.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Go ahead. I got a minute.
Look, I was listening to the younger folks coming on. I'm a 50s baby.
Okay.
And listening to what they had to say, they are so far removed from the knowledge of what they need to know. Because they're thinking that these kids that went to Baloo, that everybody graduated, if you're that gullible, that after 2 years, you went from 57% to 100%, and all of these children that had nothing whatsoever to think about school are graduating and going on to other institutions, something's wrong with you. Because if you don't blame the educational system of Washington, D.C., and not just the educational system of Washington, D.C., but America's educational system, that's not teaching children of minorities what they need to know in order to compete with their counterparts. They're not getting it. They ain't never going to get it because you always going to be substandard to the people that put that out there for you.
Okay.
And the only people that's going to be hurting this are the people that make $60,000, $70,000, $80,000. The $100,000 and above people, they don't keep their jobs. But The scapegoats are going to be the ones that make the lowest salaries.
Well, George, thank you so much for your input. I appreciate it. We've got 45, 44, 43 days before the investigation, the audit, whatever you want to call it, that the mayor brought up earlier this week. Mr. Batchelor, do you think that's the, and I know you're on the board, is that the fox guarding the hen house? Does there need to be an independent audit such as Council Member Richard White mentioned today?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I was among the first folks to say that we need an independent investigation of the system. You know, like I said earlier, we just are in a system where our entire education bureaucracy, other than the non-elected members of the state board who have very little authority, all the other folks in the bureaucracy report to one person. So, you know, even though it might not be that way, it does seem like the fox guarding the hen house. And for our community to really have the surety that we're getting the answers that we deserve, that our students who are brilliant but may have been failed in some way deserve, I think we have to have an independent investigation. And we know that that process takes a little longer than an internal audit. So I welcome the results of the internal audit. But, you know, a few months from now, I think, you know, we should be starting the process of an independent investigation and make sure that the results of both audits match up.
Interesting point. And I think that's a good place to end this conversation. Marcus Batchelor, thank you so much for coming in. Ray Bell, good to see you. Dr. Carr, always a pleasure to see you. Thank you all for talking to us. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, December 1st. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Taylor Thomas, Troy Johnson, Millette Green, Bramante Bryan, producer Candace Atkins, engineers Craig Fowler and Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night, and have a wonderful weekend.